Hello, and welcome to the Psych in Business podcast, where we highlight the integration of psychology and psychological principles into the world of business and organizations. I'm your host, Dr. Ernest Wade. All right, I have a very, very unique guest for you today. He is a leader serving with a missions organization overseas with his family. Now, for their protection, we're only going to be using his first name, which is Scott. And I'm very, very excited for you all to meet Scott because I know Scott personally and he's just a great guy doing great work. Originally from the American Midwest, Scott and his wife, Katie, have served overseas with the organization for 16 years, both in the Middle East and in Europe. They recently took on a new role to help several of their organization's cross-cultural teams thrive as people operate as a unit and remain on mission. So Scott is definitely one of the leaders of the organization. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Scott, I'm so thrilled that you agreed to do this. And I want to make sure that we're being respectful of you and the things that you need to do. But I do want to ask, tell us about your journey, because I know that you've served overseas in the Middle East and now in Europe as well. So how did you end up doing this work that you're doing currently?
Yeah, well, I'm so glad that you asked that because for my family, it's probably a different route than for many others. For us, coming from a Christian background, having made faith commitments to Jesus Christ in our younger years, my wife and I both felt independently the sense of call that was more than just a burden to serve cultures or places that were disadvantaged, but also a call from God, we believe, to give people at least an opportunity to hear that there are other ways of living life. There is an opportunity to come into relationship with God. And realizing that not everybody agrees with that, that's completely fine. But for us, it's a huge part of our journey. And all of the decisions we've made have always been intertwined with not just our own sense of what is best for us and our family, but really what are we believing God to be communicating to us. And that's a process that can take a lot of different forms. But to make a long story a little bit briefer, we both had this sense of calling in college and came together, sort of found each other through that sense of calling and through the different circles that we are part of on campus. And once we got married, for us, it was a matter of discerning what's the best way to sort of obey this sense of call, what's the best way to fulfill it. We ended up at a church in central Wisconsin, and that was a great way for us to sort of start learning about people and not so much about Christian ministry. We had taken, you know, classes in preparation, had some basic experience, but actually the most valuable part of that time was learning how to fail, I would say, and learning the valuable lessons of conflict and entering into the world of people. Mm-hmm. Christian ministry is unlike a lot of different professions. There isn't a product that you're selling. It's people. It's mm-hmm. relationships. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot on the line. There's high stakes involved. And so conflict is kind of inevitable in that scenario. So we really appreciated that experience so much. But as we were there about 3-4 years, the opportunities began to open up. We applied with a mission organization, and the opportunity to go to the Middle East was presented to us. That's not a location that we were looking for necessarily. And at the time, there was quite a bit of conflict in the region. If you do the math and you count back 16 years, it's mm-hmm. 2008. So it's the height of the conflicts in that region, at least as far as the U.S. involvement, the NATO involvement. And so here we are, this young couple with actually about an 8-month-old baby. And we stepped out in complete faith, believing that through a long series of sort of discerning this pathway, that is indeed where we ought to be. And so we stepped into an environment in our place of service and found that many of our preconceptions were completely wrong as to how the people would be. We were welcomed with open arms, with incredible hospitality. In fact, in our first few weeks in country, we were with a small team. There was three other families with us. Mm-hmm. One of them had found a way to meet a pretty high position political figure who invited our entire team to come into his private office. And it was a little bit of a show for him, a photo op. But at the same time, he invited us into his office and said, whatever you need in this country, you come to me and I'll make sure that you get what you need. So the doors were just wide open. We did not have to hide the fact that we were all Christians and that we have an interest in sharing that message with the population, and never by coercion. I think that sometimes we can maybe get that impression that those who would be in a missions organization would use whatever technique or whatever they can to try to communicate a message in maybe a subversive way. For us, it's never on the radar at all. I feel like we have to be 100% honest about everything that we're doing. And so, yes, we have a vested interest in sharing the message of Christianity and message of Jesus and giving people an opportunity to respond. But that's what it is. It's an opportunity to respond. And kind of trusting the spiritual background to all of that. If something is true, then really God has to do the hard work to change someone's life. It's not going to come down to my ability to convince people. That's of course a big part of being there. But one of the other parts is when you're in an area where we were, that's underdeveloped, probably about second world scale, if we can go back to the old UN way of looking at the world, where education was really a primary need. We saw a gap in the connection to the international community, primarily because of a deficit of English, even in government circles. And so we offered a full-on English program to start with beginners. People at least had to have a little bit of a foundation, all the way up to advanced conversation. And we wanted to give people the most practical opportunity that they could possibly receive to advance their skills. Gives them a better shot at getting jobs, easier ways to travel, education. The opportunities are endless with English abilities, with English proficiency. So those doors just really presented themselves. We never advertised a day, still don't actually, but people would hear about this course, and we never attached the English course to anything faith-based. People are coming to a course, they're getting an English lesson that they're paying for. And so we want to make good on that promise. There's no bait and switch going on. We want to serve people as best as we possibly can. There's different waves of refugees that came into that mix as well over our decade personally there in that location. And so we would always try to respond with other organizations, like-minded people, to be able to meet some of those needs, whether it was language or food deliveries, any way that we could help in some of these crisis situations that you hear about regularly from the Middle East as a whole. So we want to be a part of that as well. Now, life can be rather difficult in such a location. In many of the spots around the Middle East, the lights are on and the lights are off. Electricity isn't so reliable. So that's one of the hardships in being in a place like that. And the community is very relationally based, which on one hand I love, because you can go out. When we were learning the language, that was one of our things that we prioritize, is learning the local language. Whenever we'd step out, we'd have in our city about 1 million inhabitants. So I looked at it like I had 1 million teachers to help with the language. Everyone was very willing to stop and hear me bumble through phrases that I was picking up and make corrections. And it was a delightful way to go about learning a language. But on the flip side, people are always wanting to engage you. And so you're kind of stuck in this position where you might want to withdraw a little bit and put up some boundaries. As you know, as a Westerner, I'm much more likely to do that. And it's hard to know exactly where that limit is. But we grew to love that place. Not so much the difficulty of living there, but the people, the relationships that we formed.
So Scott, how did you navigate that? Because that's one of the things that I think is really important, is when you have a different perspective or you have a different way in which you experience life. You know, you come from the U.S. and you bring your perspective of life in general, and you go into a different country and they have a different culture. How do you find a common balance that works for both of you in that setting?
Yeah, that can be a real challenge. But I think the mindset is to start out remembering that, at least in our case, we're the visitors, we're the outsiders. And so we aren't going to change the culture to conform to our preferred way of structuring our day. We need to be in a position of being learners. And so if we can start with that mindset, we can kind of embark on a journey of uncovering things about ourselves that maybe we didn't know. Mm-hmm. For example, I didn't realize how I like to structure my day. I don't like being interrupted. I like to have a plan and a schedule. That works pretty well in the Western world. And people are used to you saying, all right, I've got work. I've got an appointment. I need to wrap this up and move on. And that's kind of how it goes. But in the Middle East, mm-hmm. life revolves around relationship. And I remember multiple occasions. I had a list of things I needed to pick up from the market. There was a central market in town. And I would usually go to the same stores and build relationship with the people that you're buying things from and not treat them just as, you know, a vendor. And so you go into the shop and I buy my product and I'm wanting to leave, and inevitably would come the question, don't you have time mm-hmm. to sit and drink some tea with me? And sometimes I would say, no, I need to keep moving. And I always felt like a jerk for doing that. But, you know, there would be other opportunities. But many of the richest interactions we ever got to have, whether they were faith-based or just simply connecting with a fellow human being, many of them came over that cup of tea or three cups of tea or however long I was able to stay behind. Mm-hmm. So it's really a balance of uncovering what about yourself do you not know? Do you not know in your routines, things that are stuck in there? Yeah. And then through the circumstances, those kind of come to the surface and you have to make a decision about how you're going to navigate that.
Yeah, so I'm hearing in there that self-awareness is key in these settings, because you really have to understand yourself and know what your tendencies are, and also understand part of who you are as a person, your identity. You know, what's important to you, what are your values, but also appreciating that in these settings, flexibility is key, especially as it turns to something like relationship building, because part of what you're doing there is building those relationships. And so that's a critical thing, and you have to be flexible to balance that against some of your core values, like not being interrupted, right?
Right. Yeah, and there's ways that you can think through some of those things. Like if you are, I think it's Myers-Briggs that balances out task orientation versus people orientation. And if you're studying that kind of situation in your own life, trying to get to know yourself better, one of the things you can do is you go, all right, in this culture, people are my task. If you happen mm-hmm. to be task oriented, you have to look at the relationships a little bit different, and that can help you then integrate better into the culture. Because ultimately, just for long-term survival, whether you're in Christian ministry or just working a job in a different culture, you want to thrive. You want to feel comfortable. You want to reduce the amount of barriers that you face in an ordinary day. Mm-hmm. You're always going to have barriers, always going to find things.
I love the way that you reframe that in terms of if you're not oriented that way, if you're more of a people person, then you have to think of it as, okay, well, the engaging the people, that's my task. That's the work that I have to do. And that can be, I think that can be very, very important for managers sometimes who think, oh, my work is to do whatever administrative or technical work I have. But part of the work of a manager is leading, and the people are your task. And so let's talk about how you do that now, Scott, because I know that as part of the work that you do now, you help to lead groups of teams mm-hmm. that are out there doing this kind of work. So what do you find is important as a leader who is helping other people do this kind of work that you used to do as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the ways that we have a great advantage is that we're still on a team. Mm-hmm. We're on a team that works together of leaders that are responsible for different sectors of the world and the different employees or workers that we have that are stationed in those spots. So being a part of a team, I think, is really important to realize. Even if you're a leader, you're still part of a team. Mm. There's almost always somebody above you that you need to also lead well, sort of leading from underneath, mm-hmm. if you will. And so that's one helpful trick that I found. In trying to navigate, what does it mean to lead others? Now, for us, there was a medical situation that pushed us out of the Middle East and brought us then to Europe, and then more recently to this particular role. This idea of managing teams and helping to give input into them, each context where we have a team is very different. They're all in a particular region of the world. They're all in the mm-hmm. Middle East, mm-hmm. but they all have nuances and differences. Yeah. And on top of that, you have a team. Let's say there's five families or five workers in one team. those are five different people as well.
Within the team. Yeah.
Within the team. Mm-hmm. Who can be motivated in different ways.
Yeah. So that's very complex, right? Because even within the team, you have parents and then you have children within the team, and that can itself be a complex dynamic. And then you have that team within a larger team of people who are out serving. So what are some of the challenges that you found in helping these teams try to manage some of the challenges that this work inevitably brings?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's stress on every side. Anyone who's lived overseas before knows that the more distant a culture is from your own. And what I mean by this concept of a cultural gap. Yeah. For example, if you're in the US and you get a job in Canada, you'll find differences culturally. They won't be as enormous as, say, for example, if you somehow were reposted and you find yourself in Somalia, for example, where you have a nation in conflict and a culture that's tremendously different. You're going to experience that gap. So our teams, by and large, who we work with because we're a US-based organization, is we have US personnel based in the Middle East. And that's a fairly significant culture gap. There's a lot of similarities, but that's baseline right there. People find that on a regular basis. When you've been transferred, you're in a new culture, that right there, just how to pay your bills, how to buy meat so you can grill a hamburger. Do they even sell grills? You know, those sort of stressors just for daily life is kind of part one. Part two is if you have a family, wife, kids, a husband, there are challenges that way, because how do you function as a family? How do you create a boundary where your children understand who they are? At least in our realm, we're not immigrating to these countries. We're not necessarily looking to fully shed our U.S. identity, because we still need to maintain the passport. Much of our support comes from our passport country, from the United States. Mm-hmm. And so really, we have to keep a foot in both worlds. And that's another challenging layer right there. And I think then the third part for us specifically then comes with the fact that we're communicating something that's very, very deep. I don't know that there's much in the universe that's deeper than spirituality. Those are very deep-seated, deeply held beliefs. And like I mentioned earlier, we're not looking to coerce anybody or do anything of that nature. But you are entering into a realm where relationships, if somebody's going to open up about their spirituality, it's a sacred thing.
There's a lot of trust.
Understanding.
Yeah, and there's a lot of trust that's required to have that conversation in an open and honest way. How did you do that? How do you help coach your teams to engage in getting to that point where they can have that discussion in a very open and honest way?
Yeah. Because ultimately, that's where we want to go. So we actually start, I alluded to this earlier, but we start with sort of a comprehensive language program that we don't necessarily design ourselves how they're going to learn language, but we insist on every career worker that they do become competent in language. And language is so fascinating because it's more than just simply words and grammar. It really shows you how people think. So for example, in the language that we learned, the verb to be born literally means to come from your mother. And when you kind of unpack that a little bit, you see this word picture almost of that, and you begin to see, okay, this culture has images that are very literal about how they understand things. And that gives you a small insight then into how the culture generally operates. So that's like a baseline strategy. We really emphasize cultural competency taken all up to your first 2 years, 18 months to 2 years, really to study language and culture and ask a lot of questions.
Right.
And to sort of become a lifelong learner of the culture that you're in. You'll never be an insider. You'll always be an outsider to some degree, no matter how long you're there. And that can be very discouraging to someone who's been in a location for 20 years to find themselves still a little bit on the outside. But that's just the way culture tends to work.
Right. So but it's really important that you try continuously or trying to understand the people that you are working with, that you're trying to reach. If you're not making that attempt, if you don't have that understanding, it's going to be really difficult to make any progress, if I'm hearing that right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the other things we do for coaching is to remind people that they are part of a team. And for us, a team means you have like a shared project, some way that you've creatively found to meet a felt need in the community that provides relationship also. So it's something more than just a service from the outside than than leaves. And I think that sets apart some of the Christian motivation, because you're trying to serve the whole person and you're there for the long term and you're learning language and things like that. But surprise, surprise, Christians are not perfect people. And even those who have given their lives to full-time service are not perfect people at all. We all bring our flaws and our foibles and our designs and our pride to the table. Mm-hmm. And you might have an idea, Ernest, of how to tackle some needs in our community. I might have another idea. Your way might seem very boring to me and uninspired, off the mark somehow. And I see a way that's a whole lot better, of course, naturally, because it's my way.
It's and your idea. It's better. Yeah,
right off the bat, we have conflict. And so this self-awareness is a huge part of this as well. And so in our coaching, mm-hmm. that's a big part. We've got a couple go-to tools that we utilize across the board to help people gain more self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And we try to use tools also that then make you share what you're discovering about yourself and sort of plot it out on some graphics that help you understand how your teammates are also thinking. Mm-hmm. One of the great surprises, I think, of the missions world, missions organization world, is the number one reason why people will end up quitting or end up leaving. It's not from some of the hardship of the culture. It's not from disappointment or disillusionment with the culture or even lack of results in some fashion. It's actually conflict with their fellow Christian workers.
Yeah.
And much of that conflict is preventable if we just slow down and take time to understand one another.
Yeah, Scott, it's so interesting to me to hear how, even though the work that you're doing is different than a lot of other teams in the business world, the functions are very similar in terms of how the team operates, right? You need to have those relationships. You need to have respect. You need to have a way of dealing with conflict. Communication is key. Trust is paramount. I mean, I'm hearing the same principles that apply in general teams are also necessary in this setting. Am I hearing that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think people are people. And I think that's from a Christian perspective, that's why we have good news, is because we're all flawed. We all bring stuff and garbage to the table. And unless we have some bigger hope, something we're aspiring to, we're kind of lost at sea. We're adrift and we're going to keep causing conflict where we don't intend to. And then we wonder how we found ourselves in this predicament.
Now, one of the things that I think is really important to talk about, and you mentioned this right at the beginning, is how you prepare for this work, right? How you prepare to be a part of a team that is going out into a different culture, bringing the good news and interacting with other people. One of the things you said was that you're taught to fail and why that's important. Talk to us about what that means, why that's important to learn as you go out and do this work.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I tell everybody who's on their way, one of the first questions I ask them is, tell me about some of your biggest failures in the last few months, because that lesson is so critical. Mm-hmm. I think, failure is inevitable. In any line of work, in our own life, in our personal lives, we're going to fail. And we have to learn to respond to that failure. I think that's probably more important than like mitigating that failure. Mm-hmm. Of course, you don't want to do the same mistake again and again and again. You do want to learn practically how to avoid that particular mistake. Mm-hmm. But more important, I think, is to build a resiliency.
Yeah.
So that when you inevitably fail, how do you bounce back from that? And with people, things get very emotional very quick, and we can lose sight of the person. We can focus on then the problem itself, getting out of that conflict, that task that we've been put into, and just try to solve that. And if things get really bad, we're really worried about our own self-preservation, and then people don't matter. Even the event that took place that put us in conflict, the failure, doesn't even matter. Mm-hmm. It's really, how do I extract myself from this extreme discomfort? So having a game plan in mind, having some experience of a couple of good failures where you learned how to extend grace to yourself, grace to other people, where you enhanced your perspective on the world. And for me, in a spiritual sense, to go, okay, what can I learn about God through this? What is God doing in my character? How can I release some of my pride and my agenda? And in faith, trust that God's plan is better than mine, and learn that through other people. And I think there's no better tutor than failure to have that kind of lesson.
Absolutely. Deeply impressed. I really appreciate what you're saying here. I think there's a couple of things that really strike a chord with me. The first one is that the importance of failure, not just to learn the lesson, because I think it's really important to learn the lesson, but in your case, also understanding, you know, what is God teaching me from this lesson? And then I think that the next one you talked about is understanding how you deal with failure, right? Building up that resiliency so that you've experienced it before. You can rely on the tools and the techniques that you've used to get out of that failure, to extract yourself from that place of failure into a place of success. So really important to have. You have that experience that you can rely on. I think those are really key and critical things. Mm-hmm. We've talked on this show about how it's important to recognize that, you know, that when you have a cause has an impact on you, and usually this will evoke an emotion that causes a behavior. And so understanding that path is really important so that you can understand where your behavior is coming from, and then Understanding how you can mitigate those are really important. So I'm hearing that is also critical in this work.
Absolutely. Yeah. People are people. And so if we can't, even at a team level, if we can't figure that out between ourselves, what are we going to be passing on to those we're trying to influence in the host culture? And let's say there is a new church that's born or something like that. How are we going to demonstrate this value of Christian unity and love and dealing with conflict appropriately if we can't even get along ourselves as those who are sort of bearing this message and maybe in some cases the first example of a Christian community? Yeah. So this is so critical. Learning how to deal with conflict and failure well is indispensable.
In this situation, you're saying you really need to understand yourself and understanding what you're bringing to bear, what you're demonstrating, what you're showing up as if you're going to try to help other people. You want to be helpful rather than hurtful, right? And to do that, you need to really understand what is helpful from you and what might be challenging that you're bringing out to bear. So really understanding yourself.
Absolutely.
Scott, I want to be respectful of your time. I know this has been such a great time talking with you, but this is where I would normally ask how people reach you, but I'm gonna say if anyone wants to reach Scott, please reach out to me, Ernest@psychandbusiness.com, and I will pass on the message to Scott, because we want to make sure that we're protecting Scott out there. But Scott, I always want to ask the leaders and the experts that we have on the show, what is a tip that you have or a piece of advice that you have for people that are out there right now, especially in the times that we're all going through?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, these are days of immense conflict, and we're seeing clashes of culture all around the world. And because of the way technology works, we're in contact with one another all the time. And so just across the board, something that I would say would be great advice for anyone who's considering working cross-culturally or has been posted for whatever reason internationally is to remember culture gives us a general framework of where people are coming from. And recognize the differences, but those are just generalities. Mm-hmm. It's important to remember that cultures are made up of individuals who can be vastly different from one another and don't always reflect what we have so diligently learned about the culture from which they come. And we have to see the individual more than anything and be on a quest to be a learner for individuals.
Yeah. That's such sage advice, Scott. And I think especially as we think about it, not just for people who are going out to work internationally, but people who are working out with people that are different from them, that are diversely different from them, and really understanding that, you know, whereas generalities come from a place, you're working with an individual. And so it's really important to understand that person at that individual level, if I'm hearing that correctly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Scott, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been absolutely amazing. I know that there's just so much more that we didn't even get to, but I really appreciate your time. And if possible, we'll have to have you come back again and talk a little bit more about some of the work that you do and share some of those experiences that you've had. I think, you know, anything that we can do to broaden the cultural perspective and appreciate other people's cultures is always really important to me. So thank you for your time.
Absolutely. My privilege.
Awesome. And to our listeners, thanks for listening. We hope that you will join us again next time. We'll be right back.